The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So some of you have probably heard me give walking meditation instructions. And one of the things I say there is that I recommend that we walk back and forth. And I say that, sometimes people ask me, why can't I just wander around aimlessly, just be mindful as I walk? And I say, yeah, you can do that. But if you wander around aimlessly in the neighborhood and all that, doing walking meditation, what happens is that a part of your mind has to negotiate the way. You know, the sidewalks, dog poop, you know, the different things along the way. And so it might be a very simple and primitive part of the mind that's negotiating the path, but still you have to be engaged in it. If you walk back and forth, 20 feet back and forth, pretty quickly you know the route. And so that part of your mind can be put to rest. It doesn't have to be activated. And so the deeper levels of concentration are also the deeper levels of calm or relaxation. They're closely connected. And so there's a lot of activity of the mind, which is not needed, gets a vacation when you go into deeper states of concentration. And so there's a number of benefits for that. One is that people find that they don't need to breathe as much, because a lot of the oxygen that we need is used to bring energy to our brain. And if our brain is not operating, full capacity, you know, all its concerns, all its neurosis and stuff, then it doesn't need to be as much energy, and it quiets down. And so the breathing can quiet down quite a bit until at some point in deep meditation, there's no awareness of that you're breathing at all. The breathing seems to completely stop. And also, in order to kind of recover from a day's activity, By sleeping, you don't need to sleep as much either when you spend a long time during the day in deep states of concentration. So there's a simplification, a quieting down of activity. So when we get absorbed beautifully sometimes in a sport or in a craft or in many different kind of places where we can get really absorbed, like taking the tests. As absorbed and still as the mind can get, there's still a certain level of engagement and involvement in the mind that's involved. And so even though you feel unified and everything's kind of collected, in order to go deeper into deeper states of peace or concentration, we have to let go of more activity of the mind. So even the activity of, doing laps back and forth in the swimming pool, some people get concentrated and nice. It does require some consideration about the swimming, what's going on, what's around you, something that prevents a certain, that keeps that part of the mind active. As beautiful it is to hike in nature and be in an alpine lake, there is still something going on. Sometimes what's going on that helps us get concentrated and helps us have meaning in the experience is the meaning-making mind that is involved. So that's activated. It's a beautiful part of the mind, but still kind of inactive. And so to access the deeper levels of peace, of concentration, of stillness, there has to be a simplification where more and more of what's become extra falls away. So deeper concentration involves a falling away of many things, shedding of things. So for example, when you're sitting here, I think chances are relatively good that there's things that you would be concerned about in other times in your life, it didn't come up to you at all during this day. It almost didn't exist. Like, how many of you today thought about the tires on your car? Probably not many of you. You probably didn't even think about your cars when you're here too much. But the whole car world, hopefully, fell away for these hours here. Concerned with traffic kind of fell away somewhat. There's a lot of things that fell away. As we get simpler, more concentrated, things fall away. So one of the things that might fall away is social concerns. who are these people around me? Do they like me? Do they not like me? How do I appear to them? What do they think about the stain I have on my shirt? Those are all important concerns, right, in normal life. But that's kind of, as we get concentrated and absorbed in the practice, those kinds of social concerns might fall away or lessen and lessen. And so there's a whole array of things that begin falling away from attention, focus. And as things fall away and get simplified, some of the things are a little bit unusual. Like for example, in deeper states, there might even be a falling away of the body. The body is very important in Buddhism, being in touch with the body, being present for the body. But in deeper states of concentration, the experience of the body falls away, and there's no experience of having a body. You still have a body. I've opened my eyes to check. It's still there. But it kind of falls away because the body, you know, is a kind of like a hard fact, I guess. But the experience of having a body, the inner perception that allows you to kind of perceive that you have a body with your eyes closed, is another activity of the mind. And in fact, now that they have study people have brain damage, they see that, for example, when certain parts of the brain are damaged, certain very simple and seemingly obvious perceptions fall away. Like apparently looking at your hand and seeing this is my hand is an activity of the mind. Certain location in the brain is capable of sending those signals to recognize this is my hand. Of course it's your hand, but it's an activity of the mind that makes it your hand. It recognizes it such. And if that part of your brain takes a vacation, then you're not seeing, you know, this is my body. Even the very idea of the body falls away. So one of the advantages of meditation practice is that it simplifies our activities to us to this kind of one of the smallest kind of degrees that we can. Pretty quickly, you know the route. I mean, nothing's going on, right? You're just sitting there with your eyes closed. And so there's a lot of extra stuff that can fall away. And as we get more absorbed, that activity of feeling safe in meditation session allows you also to easier to kind of let go of any extraneous concerns that you might have. Until it gets simpler and simpler and things get unified. You know, what's left of your activity, the mental activity and whatever, is all directed and involved in the simplicity of what's left. And at some point, there's a whole series of mental factors that come into play when you're involved in concentration practice, but there are five in particular that are held up as being particularly important to help you go deeper into it all. And so at some point, as the mind is able to kind of stay present, stay connected, not get distracted, these five supportive conditions for deeper concentration kind of kick in more strongly, get highlighted. They're factors that can often be there even when you're not deeply concentrated, but they're left there when you're in deeper states of concentration, and they become kind of the material that we work with to go further into deeper, even deeper, stiller places. So these five, the first is usually translated as the initial application of attention. The initial kind of placing the attention on the breath, for example, on whatever you want to focus on. The second is the sustained application of that attention. So you maintain the attention there. You can just keep it there. And so there's an activity of the mind that places it there and an activity of the mind that keeps you there. Stay there, stay there. That's operating. The third is joy or rapture. At some point, there's a sense of well-being that begins bubbling up when things get simplified and unified and organized and engaged, absorbed in this timeless way in what's going on here and now. And it's this, the inner well-being begins to well up. And then the fourth thing is called, usually translated as happiness, sometimes as ease or pleasure. But it's a much more sublime and more satisfying sense of well-being than the joy. Joy is a little bit energetic, more active. It's said to be a little more mental. Um, and, uh, And that as the more energetic and excited aspects of joy quiet down, then you experience this more sublime thing that's called sukha, or happiness, or ease, or kind of some sublime pleasure. And then the fifth thing is usually called one-pointedness. The mind becomes one-pointed. And here is where the kind of the little bit more like the laser focus that I talked, that I kind of avoided earlier in the day, comes into play. As we get more unified, the mind's capacity to kind of really get locked in, or really kind of get absorbed on one thing, really kind of have one, a single point of focus, single point of which everything is pointing towards, and really kind of get in the groove with that thing, comes into play more and more. And you can actually kind of feel the kind of grooveness, the kind of lockedness, the kind of honing in that the mind kind of now is honed in. It's there, that is present. So those five things become more stronger and stronger as we kind of get deeper into the practice. Until some point, there's a kind of sometimes it happens suddenly, sometimes it happens gradually, kind of ease into it. But there's a kind of a state shift. And the shift is one into kind of a clearly a different state of mind, where the mind feels maybe more expansive, more lighter, more still, more free, more pure, more certainly concentrated, simple. It's one of the important characteristics is that the normal things the mind is involved in. There's very little tendency or no desire to get involved in those anymore. So like discursive thinking, like you're not going to be planning your shopping list. Even if you start planning a shopping list, it's like, no, you don't, it's no need to go there. That just floats away without any involvement. So having conversations in your head about someone, or reviewing the past, or having, fantasies about something in your head, any kind of discursive thinking just kind of falls away. Any tendency for the mind to get absorbed or get lost in something different than the object of attention, like the breath, falls away. Just you're just not tempted anymore. You're not going to go there, and you're just kind of you're there present. And so there's a simplification process where these five factors become a lot of extra stuff falls away, and these five factors stand up more and more at highlight. I would like to believe that these five factors are factors we all have all the time, but they're crowded out by these busy, claustrophobic minds that we have. And that as the mind gets more spacious, more ruminant, and quiets down, these five factors have a chance to operate more efficiently and more clearly as kind of the forefront of what's going on. And then the first two, the initial and sustained application of attention. The word application is important here because it's a doing. It's the activity we're doing. As things get simpler and more concentrated, the forces of distraction fall away so thoroughly that we no longer need to apply the attention in any kind of way. We're here. It's clearly we're here. We're here and present. We're engaged. We're fully there. Some people describe becoming one with the breath or one with the object of attention. There's no separation, just you're it, you're there. And there's no need to encourage the mind to stay present or be present or again, because it's not going to go anywhere. It's just, there. It's like settled and arrived and it's there. And so that those first two qualities are no longer needed. You no longer need to apply your mind to the breath because you're at the breath. And you no longer need to apply your mind to sustain attention in the breath because you're not going anywhere. You're just there. You're not going anywhere, so you're there. So that falls away. Those activities fall away. And when those activities fall away, then the joy tends to stand out and highlight. You see it more clearly. It has a chance to bubble. There's more space in the mind for the joy to come. And so this joy stands out strongly. And that joy sometimes is strong enough that it's called rapture. It can be quite intense. Sometimes it's very energetic in the body. Sometimes it's quieter. And so that joy stands out in the highlight. And there be in the kind of the corners of that joy, or there's the happiness that I talked about is there, the one-pointedness is there. But, you know, the joy really is what predominates. The joy itself is kind of an activity of the mind. You don't necessarily feel like you're the one who's doing it, but still the mind is activated in some way to produce it. So in order to, as the mind gets simpler, it takes more vacation time, and then that activity falls away as well. And when that activity falls away, then what's left is this more quieter activity of the happiness, or the ease, or the kind of sublime pleasure that can be there. That's in some ways, it's much more physical. The joy, you realize, it has a mental quality to it, and the much more deeply satisfying aspect of happiness has a kind of physical, embodied feeling to it. And it's very refreshing, very peaceful. But still, you know, because it's still an activity, it's very subtle, it's not something that feels like you're making and doing so much, but it's still an activity. And so at some point, that activity is let go of, or it takes a break. And when that falls away, then the one-pointedness remains. And when the happiness falls away and the one-pointedness remains, then there comes a very, it's replaced by a very strong feeling of purity and equanimity, and a profound sense of equanimity, where, you know, just equanimous, balanced, at ease, no matter what happens. But usually what happens is very little. So it's very easy to be equanimous. Very little is going on, so it's pretty easy to be equanimous about it because there's not much going on. You know, and sometimes this is where the body, sense of a body falls away. The mind is really absorbed and really present here in this here and now. And the level of pleasure, of happiness, joy, peace, calm, serenity, purity, all these beautiful qualities, and also a sense of meaning and value, satisfaction, can be stronger in these deep states of meditation than probably almost any other state of normal kind of everyday life that we have. It's quite something to experience. It's very satisfying. And to experience that puts ordinary happiness, ordinary experience in daily life in a little different context. Not that we're supposed to kind of be in conflict or feel like, you know, But rather, if you think that happiness is only found in the world, then you'll spend your life rearranging the world. But if you realize that there is another game in town, then you're not going to invest all of your money in the world game. And you'll invest some of your money, you know, like the diversification, right? Diversity of portfolios is supposed to be important. So you invest some of your money in this other kind of happiness and well-being that is in some ways much more, much safer and more enduring than the kind of happiness that come from the conditions of the world, because the world can change very quickly. And the inner purification, inner psychological work that takes to get through to those deeper states of concentration are really deep form of cleansing of the psyche. And that lasts, and it's very healing, and that can last. When you come back out of meditation, that can last, and it can be a tremendous feeling of purity and that follows you up with it. In Buddhism, these deep states are not meant to be ends in themselves, but rather are meant to be stepping stones or jumping off points for deeper and deeper experiences of freedom, of liberation. And because when the mind gets so simple, as it gets simpler and simpler, a lot of deep and important spiritual, psychological work comes in, has to be worked out to let go of all the things that keep you from getting concentrated that deeply. So, for example, if you're really concerned about cars, you know, and that's what your life is about, cars, you're obsessing about cars and cars this and cars that, if you want to get deeply concentrated, you have to learn how to overcome your obsession about cars. You have to work through that enough so you can let go of it temporarily. And so a lot of things that normally the mind is preoccupied with are not just kind of incidental, but represent some very deep intentions, motivations, values, concerns that are very sometimes are very the deeper structures of how our mind is built, our thought world is built. And so it's very deep, very significant to work through all these things. And so by the time you get really concentrated, if you do go that far, like going into these jhanas, into these deep absorptions, you've to some degree learned how to let go of a lot, not to hold on to things and be so attached or so concerned or preoccupied with a lot of things that people normally preoccupied with. And so the mind's gotten simpler and simpler and softer and more relaxed. And so it's easier then, the more relaxed the mind is, the easier it is to take it to the next level of relaxation, next level of letting go. It's, as we go along this, sometimes there's a deep fear that arises. Some people's whole way of feeling safe in the world, oriented in the world, is tied around all kinds of ideas of self, self-concept, self-orientation, who they are in relation to other people. And the way they know they're safe in the world is because they've established an idea and a concept that of who they are in relation to everybody else. But those concepts are activities of the mind. And if the mind's going to really get calm and settled, that activity has to stop as well. Take a vacation. But if you don't have these stories to tell you who you are, then it can feel frightening. Am I okay? So to go into these deeper states, sometimes people have to work out and come to terms with some of their own deeper fears and everything. And that's a profound thing to do. And sometimes it's challenging to do that. And so as we get deeper and deeper into these states, the mind is being pure, more and more purified or more relaxed or more simpler, let go of a lot. And so the amount of letting go that's left becomes easier and easier. It's not like all these, our core attachments are not encrusted with all these other, all this other rust and attachments and, things that kind of build up on top of it. And so finally we come to a place where there's, maybe it's very core, the last remnants of attachment or holding in the mind. But we finally get down to kind of at the more base level of where attachment occurs. In a way, you can't really do so well it tends to be much harder when the mind is busy and concerned with cars and getting oil changed and, all these kinds of things. And so finally you can see this, you see like the core operating structure, operating system in the, in the mind. And then at some point that can let go as well. And then a person knows that it's possible to have experience of life, experience of being alive, experience of consciousness that is free of any kind of attachment or clinging whatsoever. It's possible to have that experience, that vacation. And that becomes kind of a revolution in the mind. Copernicus, kind of like the way he kind of changed the whole view of the cosmos. There's a radical restructuring or revisioning of what this life is about, who we are in this life. And we come back to our life. I mean, the world doesn't change. And it's the same world, and we still engage with it. But then there's a very different way of engaging that is not based on being attached or clinging to self or some core ideas that we have. And hopefully, my faith is that then there's a much greater capacity to respond to the world, to deal with the world out of compassion, because compassion remains, even when clinging is not there. So the process of the seven factors of awakening is a process of going through these deeper stages of practice. It starts with mindfulness. And cultivating strong mindfulness by seeing clearly what's there, having discernment, being engaged with ardently, having some ardency, some real engagement in the practice. As those three factors work together, mindfulness, clear comprehension, ardency, then the mind starts getting settled and focused and concentrated, and then the factors of concentration start coming into play. And the factors that are related to concentration are joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And in the description I described of going through these five jhanic factors. You go from, you have the joy. When the joy gets tranquilized, you come to happiness, and then you get more concentrated, you come to equanimity. So it's a little bit of a parallel, the seven factors of awakening, the sequence is the sequence of the developing, going through the jhanic factors. So concentration is a part and parcel of this whole process. And so I've given you some overview of it today. And then next time we meet, which I forget when the date is, but in about a month or so, sometime in May, we'll do equanimity, the last factor of awakening. Hopefully you didn't have to wait until the last class to be equanimous about all this. But if not, if so, then come next week and next month, and we'll find how to be more equanimous about the whole game, the whole show, the whole practice. So I hope that was useful. And I apologize to go a little bit late here, but if we could have about seven people to help clean up.